The Money Show. Business Unusual.
Business Unusual brought to you by the all-new, always-connected BMW 5 Series with BMW Connected Drive Services, your personal mobility assistant. Visit bmw5series.co.za for more. Business Unusual. And the world is getting a pretty unusual, Colin Cullis. For a long time, we believed the internet was secure. We believed our data was secure. And suddenly, there's some very serious questions being asked as to who actually owns that data, what that data might be worth, and who should have access to that data. And you've published, as you often do on a Wednesday night, a little poll on social media questioning people's view as to how they feel about their data, their search history online, for example.
Yeah, because it seems like a reasonable question. And with so many things relating to technology, we base our thinking about technology on what we know in the real world. And the two don't always square up, and you get sort of odd things happening. So that poll question simply asked, who should have access to your encrypted data? So this would be stuff that you have wanted to be secure. You want to keep it private. This is not something you've posted publicly for people to have access to. And I gave you the option to say no one, your partner, your employer, or the state. And you can slice that any way you like, with police services, justice, or somebody sitting in a safety and security ministry who thinks it's important to do it. And it comes on not on the back of a first call, but another call for authorities wanting to get access to encrypted services. And I raise it here because it's a very well-known one, WhatsApp. On the back of the Westminster Bridge attacks on the 22nd of March, the British Home Secretary had said she would like to gain access to read the encrypted messages transmitted over WhatsApp, as it was believed that a message was sent on WhatsApp just minutes before that attack occurred. But it's not possible because of the encryption that WhatsApp and many other services use. So this is a bit of a primer to help you understand how it works. It's simplified again, like most of these things, because otherwise it would take too long. And then I'd love to ask you this question again at the end to see if your thinking may have shifted. Ooh. If the explanation kind of made sense.
Okay.
So let's start with how this works. So our privacy is safeguarded by security measures. We kind of understand the security measures would include physical security and the new Samsung S8, whatever, that was just launched now. That's got a whole bunch of new ways of securing it. You can use your eyes and your face and your finger. That's mm-hmm. physical security. But then you have things like passwords. So that's remote access. You can access a website. You need to first give it a password or use your voice or some other thing. And then there's the data on the phone and the messages you send between devices, because you see, the internet is open. And while you have something safe on your computer and something safe on somebody's other computer, while it's busy traveling between the computers, someone could intercept it. And if they can read what's in there, well, you have a breach. That is, somebody busy reading it. And this encryption tries to make it that what you send to each other is gobbledygook and nobody can read it unless they have a means to decipher it. So let's start now with the real world version, which is what people use typically, and I think understandably, to say, well, imagine it is keys and locks. That's what you've got. And in a real key and lock real world scenario, you've got a lock of a varying sort of quality and sophistication, and one or more keys that'll allow you to unlock it. That's easy for us. We got that. No problem giving certain people keys. We think they're allowed to have access. And then you get this notion of code. So if I, too, for example, send you a message that was CSVDF, you might say, ooh, that's all very clever. Well, that's simply Bruce with me advancing each letter forward by one. So that's
What is my name with my so
CSVDF.
Is that my name? CDS.
That's your name in my little cipher for you. Yeah. Now the issue with that is I need to tell you how I coded that. And if that isn't in code, well, somebody can intercept that and the whole thing falls down. But more of a problem, and people are fascinated with the Enigma machine and how that was eventually cracked, is that people can simply try lots and lots of options, and computers give us the ability to test millions, if not billions, of options to try and crack that code. And this is where the encryption thing comes along, and specifically this one known as two-key encryption, which is ridiculously clever. So the way it works is you create a public key. And this is where if your eyes start watering now, that's okay. This is the part where it does get a little bit what. There is a public key. And effectively, it uses an equation using prime numbers. And if this starts sounding a bit like, hang on, you're talking blockchain again. Well, it is similar. It works on the similar principles. So I give out this public key, and anybody can have that public key. And if they want to send me a message that no one can read, they just use that key to encrypt it. Effectively, when you send a WhatsApp message, you go to a WhatsApp server to say, I want to send a message to Bruce, and it says, here's Bruce's public key. And I put my message through that, and it transmits it over to you. And only you, with your private key, can turn that gobbledygook back into something that makes sense. Even if somebody intercepted it, even if they sent it to 1,000 different people, only you can unlock it. And similarly, and I'll just use as a small footnote, when you send a message that you have encrypted with your private key, people can use that as a digital signature to say, haha, this definitely came from Bruce. Even though anybody can unlock that message, they can now prove that it came from you, the way you sign a document that says this is Bruce's signature. So these are useful things for us. Now, when somebody comes along and says, but I need to have access to that only on special occasions and only, you know, for the direst, most urgent cases of national security, I need to get access to this. Well, effectively, you're not creating a special key to be used once off and only on a certain lock. You're creating a master key that works for every lock.
Okay. And that's kind of quite scary.
This is where the thing falls over. So again, it's quite rational for somebody to believe that's how it should work. But for encryption to work, the only way encryption can work is if there is only one person able to open and close that lock. As soon as you add another way, two things happen. Those keys need to be distributed by a bunch of authorities. And as well-intentioned as those authorities are, someone is going to be tempted to let it slip to somebody else or abuse it for when they're going to use it for access. And the second thing you absolutely know is people now publicly know there is a way to get inside this thing, which isn't the current means. And the current means of doing it is using enormous numbers, numbers that take millions of years for the best machines to try and guess. That's what kind of makes them safe. They're not that you can't crack them. It's just very unlikely. Although if we refer to another show we did about one that almost guarantees you can't crack them, that would be the one we did on quantum computing and that really strange notion of entanglement that does offer protection for encryption.
No, okay, so we find ourselves in a world where governments and companies are very keen to get access to our data. But we've probably agreed somewhere along the line that it's not our data. It actually belongs to the cell phone company or to the phone manufacturer or to somebody else. Somewhere we signed something virtually online. We've probably given away our rights long ago.
Now, that is a fascinating conversation about privacy and one which, you know, we could certainly, well, we will have lots of discussions about and people really need to think about. But the difference is when you have agreed, you give permission, even if it was like, I didn't actually realize what I was doing at the time, you give permission for somebody to have access. When you put in a backdoor on encryption, you effectively take away your ability to secure it. Not to give permission for somebody to get access to it. Because quite honestly, if an authority said, I want you, as the US is suggesting, you want to visit the US, you've got to give us your passwords for your WhatsApp and for your phone and for everything else. Now, that hasn't been passed yet, but that's a way of forcing people to give you permission without compromising encryption. You see, the platforms are secure, but people can still get access. If somebody wants to just come and, copy your fingerprint, they could get access to a fingerprint thing. But it doesn't compromise how fingerprint encryption potentially would work, just some people's access. You're effectively only breaking in to one phone now. You're only compromising one person's security. And that's doable. In fact, after this attack, there were people, the techies, had said, oh, clever one, British Home Secretary, why don't you ban cars seen as he rode into people? But we understand that cars come with far more benefits than the potential threats they pose.
Okay, so here's the question, and it's one about security, it's one about our rights, and some people listening to this will say, what's the big deal? I've got nothing to hide, my life is boring, there's nothing of value, anybody wants to access my device can have all the access they like. They're not going to learn anything useful or interesting, they might sniff around, but they'll go away eventually.
Would they say the same about access to a bank account? In effect, okay. When you
Why
can
you make
be
complicated. Why do you have to make it complicated? Why do we have to make it about
I'll
money?
Make it simple. The answer for this question that I asked, who should have access to your encrypted data, had the following percentage of the, what's it at now?
Okay, remind us. Okay, so the question was, who should have access to your data? And the four possibilities were?
No one, my partner, my employer, or the state.
I would go pretty much with the order in which you ask the questions. Most people, I would argue, and I'm not looking at the results, would say nobody. Maybe a couple would say my partner can have access because they trust their partner. Some might say their employer, a tiny minority, if anybody, would suggest that the state should have access.
You're a genius. You've almost nailed them. 86% have come back with no one. 10% my partner. 1% my employer. 3% the state. Now, I'm going to correct it for everybody here. No one should have access to your encrypted data without your express permission. That's
express, not express even implied
permission.
Express. And you why would you give access away? Why would you?
Exactly.
Colin Cullis, thank you very much. Business Unusual correspondent Colin Cullis, as always, on a Wednesday evening.